I was just physically and emotionally so uncomfortable that I had done this, that I had all these people looking at me and I had put myself out there. And I looked in the mirror and I said, what are you doing? Why did you just do that? You knew you shouldn't have done that. And that was my big, okay, you need to just cut the crap. Stop trying to be something you're not. No good came of what you just did. And I really started to do a lot of introspection about who I am as a person and a leader. And I got bit by the leadership bug and I became really intrigued by what makes us leaders and how can people become better leaders by tapping into the best of who they are.
Welcome to the Seven Hats Podcast. My name is Yuval Selig, and I've been on the entrepreneurial roller coaster for over 20 years. I've experienced it all throughout my journey, the grind, burnout, failure, and ultimately, success. The turning point for me was realizing that building a successful company is meaningless if you neglect the other significant areas of your life. So today, I'm inviting you to join me on an adventure through those seven areas, what I call the seven hats. Every week, my guests and I will drop valuable insights and pearls of wisdom, helping, motivating, and inspiring you to get your seven hats in order and deliver real impact with meaning. So let's get going. Hey there, Seven Hatters. Today, we're diving into a conversation that's going to change the way you think about leadership, success, and self-acceptance. My guest is Stacey Chazen, a leadership coach, entrepreneur, and an expert in the power of introversion. Stacey's journey from navigating an extrovert-biased world to embracing her own strength as an introvert is nothing short of inspiring. In this episode, we'll be exploring hats 1, 3, and 4, the soul, the servant, and the entrepreneur, as we uncover how Stacey transformed her understanding of introversion into a leadership superpower. From her early struggles with societal expectations to her breakthroughs in coaching and organizational leadership, Stacey's story is a testament to the idea that embracing who you truly are is the key to unlocking your greatest potential. We'll talk about how introverts can thrive in high-pressure environments, the myths that hold them back, and why some of the most powerful leaders in history have been quiet, deep thinkers. So, if you ever felt like you had to play the extrovert to succeed, this episode will give you the permission to lead on your own terms. Get ready for a thought-provoking and empowering conversation. Let's welcome Stacey to the Seven Hats. Hey, Stacey, welcome to the Seven Hats.
Thanks, Yuval. It's great to be here.
Stacey, I'm really excited to have you here today. Diving into your work, it's clear that you've dedicated yourself to changing how we think about introversion, leadership, self-acceptance. Your journey from navigating the extrovert bias world to embracing and championing the unique strengths of introverts actually truly inspired me, and that's why I was so excited to get you on. And you've shown how embracing our authentic selves can unlock extraordinary professional and personal growth. But today isn't just about understanding introversion. Mm-hmm. It's about discovering how we, as individuals and entrepreneurs, can amplify our innate gifts to lead more intentional, fulfilling, dare I say, lives. But before we dive into all your insights and golden nuggets, the Seven Hatters love a good backstory. Let's start at the beginning and get to know Stacey a bit better. So Stacey, where were you born and how was your childhood like?
So I was born in Long Island, New York. I grew up in upper middle class suburban household out on Long Island. My parents and I have a younger brother. And I had a very traditional, relatively normal childhood. Went to public school, had friends, got involved in different activities in high school. And when I actually look back on this story of mine, this childhood of mine, I realized that my story of how I got to where I am sitting in this chair today, working with introverts, it all started probably when I was in preschool. And mm-hmm. I wonder if I could tell you a little bit about that.
Please. Please, I'd love it.
So when I look back on my journey, and that's really my journey of discovering my introversion, and even more importantly, recognizing what a gift it is, started back in as early as probably 3 years old, whenever I started preschool. And it's back then that I think we all begin to hear these messages that being extroverted, and we don't hear that word, but behaviors and preferences that describe extroverts are better than behaviors and words that describe introverts. So you'll hear from the preschool teacher, she needs to play with more kids, or how come she wants to go off by herself during recess, or she likes to read more than she likes to play kickball on the playground. And we continue to hear these messages as we're growing up, right? Being more social, being collaborative, wanting to be with other people, to collaborate, to play, to have more friends, to go out on more Saturday nights rather than staying home and reading a book or watching a movie. All those things are better than, in some way, the way we like to do things and the way that we're actually fueled. This is this extrovert bias that you just referred to. It starts as early, really, as soon as we're taking messages in, I think, and socializing or socializing differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, quick question. Where in Long Island?
Suffolk County, near Stony Brook.
My sister went to Stony Brook.
Ah.
And I lived in East Meadow for a couple of years when I was 12.
Okay.
We
okay.
traveled a lot. I was on the East Coast. So yeah,
all right.
Love Long Island. So tell me about the relationship between you and your brother, you and your parents. What did they do? Mm-hmm. How was that like?
My dad was a lawyer. He had his own legal practice. My mother was a stay-at-home mom until probably I was a teenager and she went back to work. She was an administrative assistant at Stony Brook University at the hospital there. And my brother is 5 years younger than me, and being different genders and having somewhat of an age gap, we weren't very close growing up, but we are very close now, I'm happy to say. And the things that I excelled at as a kid, looking back, were related to my introversion. So I was a really strong student. I did love to read. I didn't have a whole lot of friends, but I had a few friends that I had deeper relationships with. And as I'd say, my academic achievements, my parents really focused on those and praised those. So I got a lot of positive feedback for the way that I was excelling in that space.
And what did your parents want to see in you? Did they have dreams, hopes? Did they want you to be a lawyer, a doctor?
That's a great question. I don't remember them ever pushing me to go into a particular field. I think they wanted me to do something that would let me be financially comfortable, financially, I don't want to say independent, because I don't recall them saying you should be able to be financially well without a partner. And I don't think I ever heard that, but certainly to be comfortable financially so that I wasn't struggling, that I wasn't worrying about money, and that I was doing something that made me happy. And my father used to say things like that adage, if you find a career that you love, you'll never work a day in your life, that kind of thing. And he loved being a lawyer. So that was certainly coming from a place of experience and knowledge.
And is your brother an introvert or an extrovert?
My brother's an extrovert. I hadn't thought about that. My brother can talk to anyone, anywhere. He's the friendliest guy. I'm a type A. He's a type, I don't know, whatever the opposite of that is, C, D. He's much more laid back than I am. But he is. He makes friends everywhere he goes.
Yeah, it's like my wife. She can't be in a line without bringing home about 4 or 5 friends.
Oh, boy.
So what happened? You know, you went to high school. Did you go to college? How did you start your discovery of introversion and where did that come about?
So I had experiences that in retrospect, I realized were related to my introversion. So when I first got to college, hard to make new friends whenever you're starting in a new environment. And I did make friends, but going out, you know, multiple nights a week and partying and getting involved in that culture, that was not my thing. And it was harder. I did eventually join a sorority, but it wasn't that instant, oh, I can't wait to be, make 500 new friends and go out 4 nights a week and be drinking and partying and that whole scene. So there was that. But then in college as well, I had a chance to find my people. So the close friends that I made in college, who I still have to this day, well, one actually is very extroverted, but the other is introverted just like me. And we've talked about this recently. So you find your people. And I think that it's important for introverts to have extroverts because they're the ones that'll drag you to the occasional party or they'll introduce you to people. Or if you're traveling, they're the ones that'll ask the tour guide or the cab driver all the questions. So I got to see the value of having that mix of friend types.
And so what did you do professionally after college? Where did you start?
This is very funny in retrospect. And I, I don't know why this only occurred to me recently, how absurd this career was for me as an introvert, but I worked in public relations. So I studied marketing and communication in college. I love to write. And I found that a career in PR let me put my business degree to work and also do a whole lot of writing, because folks in PR do that a lot. And I did that for about 10 years. And I hated the media pitching part of it, right? We had to do cold calls. And this was in the mid 90s. So there was hardly any email yet. There was one guy in the office who had dial up AOL service that would like, you know, with the static and the yes. beeps when you would dial in. And so it was literally picking up the phone, calling people I didn't know to pitch stories. And I hated it. And so, of course, because I hated it and it wasn't aligned with my true innate strengths, I really wasn't very good at that part of it. So I looked for more roles in PR that were about writing, but I eventually decided that I wasn't really getting enough meaning out of that career. And I decided to go back to school and get a master's in public health. And ended up working for a health policy center in Princeton, New Jersey, where I worked on supporting state Medicaid agencies and health departments in trying to improve access to care for underserved populations.
And so that led, because right now you're on your own, right? You're an entrepreneur, so you stepped into that world.
Yes.
When did that happen? And how did you decide, well, I'm just going to go and help folks with introvertedness?
Yep. So I'm an entrepreneur in two spaces right now. I'm an entrepreneur in the health policy and public health space. I've been doing consulting in that field since 2018, so a little over 6 years. So while I was at this job, I worked for this nonprofit for about 10 years. We actually had an experience that in retrospect was life-changing. We had a leadership coach come in for a company retreat, and we had the opportunity to take a Myers-Briggs type indicator assessment, or MBTI. So for any of your listeners not familiar with MBTI, it's the world's most commonly used personality assessment, and it tells you what your preferences are along four dimensions, one of which is how you give and get energy from the world. And those of us, like me, who tend to gain energy from being by ourselves, from going deep in thought, from having fewer relationships, deeper relationships, we're known as introverts. And those folks who are fueled by the outside world in general are known as extroverts. So I got my Myers-Briggs report, and we had great opportunities to learn about the people we worked with, find out about their profiles. And it was this, my first aha moment, where I realized the people who had the opposite letters that I did, I said, oh, that's why you drive me crazy, right? You approach work completely differently than I do. It's not that you're less organized or not as creative or not as smart or not as good at your job. You're just going about it a totally different way. And the way you're doing it aligns with how you're wired. And the way I do what I do is aligned with how I'm wired. And I started to realize that I was pretending. I felt like I had to pretend to be extroverted, that I had to pretend to say, oh, sure, I'm up for going out for drinks after work today. Or yes, I'd love to collaborate with five people on every project I'm working on. And when I tried to do it like that, it was draining my energy. I wasn't showing up as my best self. And I just wasn't happy. This is when I first started thinking about, okay, maybe I need to just stay true to who I am. That was the beginning of it. And then this is my real big aha moment. So I was at a conference. This was back in 2016. It was a conference of about 500 people. And I knew a number of people there. One of the conference organizers came up to me during the lunch break, and he said, when we come back from lunch, we want to get a group of people to come up on stage, and we're going to do a flash mob and start dancing, because we want to get people energized for the afternoon session. Would you be willing to come up and be one of the first people on stage? Well, hell no, I didn't, because I'm not a good dancer. I don't like to dance as a result. And the idea of 500 sets of eyes, which I knew I would feel would be entirely on me, made me want to throw up. But I felt like I had to say yes, because I wanted to show that I was game, that I was a leader, that I, you know, I was that, I don't know, that cool person who, sure, I'll help out, whatever you need. So I did it. It was awful. And at least I'm sure other people didn't think it was awful. Maybe they did, but I felt sick. And as soon as it was done, I fled the room and I hid out in the ladies' room for about, I don't know, an hour or so. Because I was just physically and emotionally so uncomfortable that I had done this, that I had all these people looking at me, and I was just had put myself out there. And I looked in the mirror and I said, what are you doing? why didn't you just do that? You knew you shouldn't have done that. And I ended up missing an hour of the conference, feeling completely depleted for the rest of the day. And that was my big, okay, you need to just, you know, cut the crap and, you know, stop trying to be something you're not. No good came of what you just did. And I really started to do a lot of introspection about who I am as a person and a leader. And I got bit by the leadership bug, and I became really intrigued by what makes us leaders and how can people become better leaders by tapping into the best of who they are. And I went back to school again. I got a master's in organizational development and leadership. And the whole theme of the program really was leading from a place of self-awareness. So how can you recognize who you are, warts and all, but even more importantly, your gifts, what's great about you? And how can you tap into those gifts to show up professionally and show up as a leader and have an impact on the world in ways that are true to who you are as an introvert, particularly because that's what resonated with me, but as an overall human? So that's my story in a little bit more of a nutshell.
I love it. We took Myers-Briggs a while back. I believe I was an ENFJ, if I recall.
Okay, so I am ISTJ.
ISTJ, wow. Yeah, that's interesting. My partner, Chris Simbarian, I believe is INTJ.
Okay.
All right. Interesting. Well,
that's nice to have a mix. I call it the beauties in the alphabet soup, I think. Whether it's personally or professionally, you want to be with a mix of people.
That's for sure. So you're an expert in introverts and extroverts and leadership, and now you're an entrepreneur and you've been in the corporate world and the whole thing. So I got a bunch of questions that I'm just really curious about. So, you know, business is a tough sport. I've found myself in the fetal position, sucking my thumb plenty of times in my career. So I'm curious, how do you balance self-care while pursuing professional growth as an introvert if it is different than an extrovert? So I might ask a few questions that might be the same for both introverts and extroverts.
Yeah.
But maybe they're different. So I'm asking it anyway.
Yeah. So first I'll say it's different. Yeah. Because in large part, because of how we source our energy, how we're energized and how we're depleted. So someone who's an extrovert, and as a caveat here, I'm talking in generalization. So all of these things don't apply to every extrovert and every introvert, but in general, that's where you're going to lean, let's say. So generally speaking, extroverts are going to be energized and motivated by much more engagement with other people. They don't need the breaks in between. They do what we say, the expression, they tend to think out loud. They want to talk through an idea before they get to it, before they land on it, right? They're getting that fuel from collaboration. Whereas as an introvert, you're going to ask me a question for a big idea to solve a problem. I don't want to tell you right away what I think, because I need to think about it. I need to sit with it. And I want to, it's going to be more important for me to collect the data, to look for stories, to build the case, so that when I'm coming back to you, my ideas represent how I have processed in a way that taps into my strengths. So let me take that to my entrepreneurial life. That means it takes me a little longer to get things done than it might take someone who's extroverted, because I'm going to give things a lot more thought. Mm. And for me, it's going to produce what I'm going to say a higher quality product or engagement or relationship. And that's not to say with the extroverts that we're necessarily producing something better than extroverts. They might get to the same place I get, but they're going to do it through a different process. So that's one piece.
Interesting. So in that light, are there any practices that you recommend to help introverts keep recharging and maintaining that energy, especially in the fast-paced world that we live in right now? It's really crazy, and I'm sure it's very difficult for introverts, you know, with all this information coming at them at the same time, right?
Yeah, so a few things I could recommend. One is something called task batching. And task batching means digging into a certain type of work, like administrative work, emails, creative work, strategic work. These are different categories of work. So when we're switching back and forth between different types of work, so let's say I respond to some emails, then I write a blog post, and then I record a social media video, all these things. When we switch between different types of work as introverts, it tends to drain our energy a lot more than it does for extroverts. So what I do and what I recommend to other introverted professionals, including entrepreneurs, is try to group certain types of work together throughout your day. Do all your administrative work at once, all your creative work, you know, after taking a break, do that for 2 hours or 1 hour, whatever it is that you need to do. So that's one important thing. Another thing we want to do is having breaks between social interactions is really important. If you're going from meeting to meeting to meeting, whether it's on Zoom or whether it's in person, you're not going to have that time you need to recharge. Mm-hmm. So you can do that in a few ways. You can ideally block times on your calendar. So maybe it's 3 times a day that you're blocking 20 minutes. And if you can take a walk or you can listen to a podcast, whatever it is that you need to do to step away from the work and recharge, meditate, practice, do a brief yoga practice, whatever it is, try to do that. Another thing that some organizations do, and you can do it individually as an entrepreneur, is have a rule that instead of 60-minute meetings or 30-minute meetings, you're going to finish 10 minutes before the end of the hour or half hour. So you'll do a 50-minute or you'll do a 20-minute. And so that's giving you that 10-minute buffer before you go into the next one so that you can catch your breath, recharge, get your head in the game for the next interaction.
I think that's great advice. And even for extroverts, my calendar is filled minute by minute by minute with no breaks. I can literally have 6 back-to-back calls, you know, 5-6 hours of calls. And it's draining. Even for an extrovert, it's really draining. And I think the advice in general for entrepreneurs is end your meetings early if you can, maybe 5 or 10 minutes. So you could just have a break between meetings. It's good for everybody. And try not to fill your calendar minute by minute, which is really hard, especially for founders, because we want to do everything we need to do so much during the day. We feel like at the end of the day, we never get anything done. So it's focus, but also giving yourself, and this I'm speaking to myself as well, giving yourself the ability to take a break, the right to take a break, because it's so important for us as human beings. Stacey, we also have our way about us. It's hard to change that. I mean, ask me how I know that, right? So in your opinion, how do you recommend introverts handle situations that challenge their natural tendencies? Because you're giving advice on what they should do in order to live in this fast-paced world. But how do you make that change? How do you teach an old dog new tricks?
How do you teach introverts to start following these strategies so they're not getting drained?
Yeah, because they're comfortable in that space.
Yeah. So one thing I do when I teach, and I just launched a digital program, a digital course called the Introverts Leadership Formula. And one of the modules in there is preventing burnout. And a big piece of it, because introverts are much more susceptible to burnout in the workplace for a lot of the reasons we just talked about, I would encourage you as an introvert, if you're listening to this, to start journaling and reflect on how did I feel at the end of the day? What were some times where I felt energized? When were some times that I felt depleted? And I think when you begin to reflect on what is it that's leaving you feeling tired, leaving you feeling like you're not giving your best ideas, producing your best work, you're going to start to see some patterns in what's showing up for you. And then to start experimenting, try on what does it look like when I schedule 3 breaks for myself during the day? Reflect at the end of the day, journal about it. How was my energy today compared to last week when I wasn't doing this? And just do some tests and see what impact it has on you.
It's funny, you mentioned burnout. Do introverts experience burnout the same way as extroverts? Is there a difference in how they, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced burnout in the past. How is that like compared to our friends, the extroverts?
So it's going to be the things that drain our energy. So the constant interaction, if you're trying to network the way extroverts do, where you're trying to meet 50 people at a cocktail party, let's say, those are the things that are going to, if you're having that energy deficit over an extended period of time, that's going to drain you and lead to burnout. Whereas when you flip it and you look at extroverts, if they're not getting that engagement with the outside world, that's what's going to drain them, right? Mm. If they're forced, let's say, forced to work by themselves, or for whatever reason, their company doesn't let them travel anymore and go to conferences, that could lead to burnout in a totally different way. That's such an interesting question that I haven't gotten before. But it's, they're depleted because they're not getting that fuel that they need from the outside world, which for introverts, that's what drains us, is that interaction.
Well, every response you're giving me, I have another question. So you're talking about networking and that energy. But leadership positions come with a prerequisite of being around people, yep. right? So what advice do you give the introverts for navigating large Zoom calls, networking events, conferences, yep. things of that nature?
Yeah, great question. So the idea is, and this is a philosophy that I use in my coaching practice and my teaching, is you want to be doing all these things, whether it's networking, communicating, managing conflict, all the stuff. You want to be doing from a place where you're tapping into your innate strengths and gifts. And I use this framework in my coaching practice called appreciative coaching. And the idea is that you're tapping into your positive. You're not trying to fix what's not working. You're trying to identify the best of who you are. And it's something called your positive core. So your positive core could be, like, for me is I'm a strong writer. I think I have a sense of humor at times. I'm good at going deep in conversations and relationships. Let's just say those three things, right? And the idea then is, when you're looking at your leadership, your communication, whatever it is, how can you use your positive core to do those things? You're going to want to do them in ways that are aligned with your strengths. And so when we think about networking, for example, let's say you're going to a three-day conference. Your goal should not be to attend every single session and happy hour and meet 100 people. What you want to do, what I recommend is, so we're really good at, introverts tend to be good at preparing ahead of time. You want to identify, for every day that you're at the meeting, identify three people who you want to meet. So a three-day meeting, let's say there are 9 people that you want to meet. And these days, you can see the registration list on the conference app, or maybe it's on the website. Look at who's going to be there, identify those 9 people, and then research them. Look at their profile on LinkedIn or on their website and figure out, what is it that you want to get out of the conversation? Whether it's, I want to get advice, maybe I want a new job, maybe I want to ask them about a paper they just published. And prepare short notes for yourself, and then you look for those people. And you're preparing yourself, you're giving yourself a very manageable goal. And when you've gotten through your 9, maybe you'll meet some other people, but you don't have to. Like, take the pressure off yourself. And what you're going to be able to do as a result is you're going to be able to go a lot deeper in those conversations. And I believe that that will have an even greater impact on whatever it is you're hoping to get out of that conference than having surface level conversations with 50 people.
That is awesome. Really great advice. But again, I'm harping on the notion that if you look at the world, leaders that are revered are usually extroverts. They're usually very comfortable, but it might be a mask, because they might be introverts that are masking to be extroverts, potentially.
Yeah, I think assume they're extroverts because they're up on the stage, right?
Yeah.
I'll flip that script for you for a moment and think about the fact when you're up on the stage giving a presentation or some motivational talk, you don't have to engage in small talk. You've had a chance to prepare. You've had a chance to pull together your facts, all the things. And so I think that being a motivational speaker and being very comfortable up on a stage is very well aligned with being introverted.
So if you can define the two or three strengths that introverts bring to leadership roles, what would they be?
One is, we tend to be highly empathetic and emotionally intelligent. So we're able to understand other people's or other groups' priorities and needs. Super important for developing relationships, but also for creating an organization's vision. How can we align with the people we're trying to serve or the people who are part of our team? So I think that's the biggest one. Introverts also are very good at deep and reflective thinking. They're not rash speakers. So we step back, we take the time to take it all in, to collect the facts, to understand, to look at the nuances of a situation, so that we're being really thoughtful when we're designing the direction of an organization or mapping out the future of a company. We've taken into account really the deep analytical pieces of information that we need. And then I will say, I have to pick one of these two. Okay, I'm going to say...
You can add more. You don't have to just have three.
You need two more. So one is, we tend to have a calm demeanor, which means we're very good at diffusing conflict. So if we're in a meeting, if we're at the head of an organization, we're very good at not just jumping in and trying to fix it with a Band-Aid. We're very good. We come to be relied on for the fact that we have this calming effect and a head for figuring out how to resolve conflict in a way that's going to make both parties or all parties feel good about where where we're headed. And then the last one, and I will admit there's some bias in this because I see this in myself, is introverts tend to be very strong writers. We really excel in written communication. And being able to articulate your vision, your support, your notion of where an organization should be going and how, being able to articulate that effectively and in a motivating way in writing is super important. And I think is a mark of a true leader.
Have you ever seen a schizophrenic, basically an introvert and an extrovert in the same body? Because you're describing certain characteristics that I see even within myself. How do you settle that in terms of the specifics that you're speaking to? And can someone be an introvert and an extrovert at the same time?
That's a topic of debate. Whether people say, oh, I'm both, or I'm right in the middle. What I believe, based on what I've learned and what I've seen, is that we're wired the way we're wired. So I am an introvert. That does not mean that I can't act in extroverted ways. And I'll give you, to me, the best way to understand that, and I use this with my coaching clients, is I say, pick up a pen with your dominant hand, and I want you to sign your name. And they do that. And I say, how did that feel? And they say, it was like nothing. I do it all the time. Easy. I didn't even think about it. And I say, okay, now put the pen in your other hand. And I want you to go ahead and sign your name. They do it. Usually takes a little longer. And I say, now, how did that feel? And they'll use words like, it was awkward, uncomfortable, it was messy, it took me longer, that kind of thing. So to me, that's when you're talking about introversion and extroversion. I can go to this cocktail party with 100 people, and if I have to meet 30 people for whatever reason, I can do it, but it's not going to feel comfortable. I'm not going to have as good an outcome as I would if I just met the 3 people, and it's going to deplete me. So people can act in ways that are typically opposite to the way they're wired, but it's not a recipe for success in the long term. And so you can do it, but you're probably not going to do it as well.
It's a great analogy, except for those that maybe can write on both.
Yes,
what are they called? Ambidextrous or something. But you always have the 1% that maybe could.
Absolutely.
So let's continue the conversation about awkwardness and for an introvert and just kind of giving them tools, because I'm sure a lot of folks are listening and they're going to be, they're on the introvert spectrum. So you're sitting in front of a boss, you're faced in front of investors for fundraising pitches, very nerve-wracking, right? Mm-hmm. How do they cope? What are some ideas that they can take with them to be able to position themselves as a leader or powerful in those specific situations?
Yep. So a lot of that is going to come down to preparation. So typically when you're doing something like that, you're not speaking on the fly. So you want to prepare as much as possible. And that's going to start with knowing your audience. Who is it that's around the table? Harder if it's hundreds of people, then you might want to kind of profile, okay, I have people who are from this industry, or this is what these folks are caring about. But let's say you have a room of 10 people you're presenting to a board. To the extent you can, learn what are their priorities? What is it that they want to be hearing from you? What are their needs and priorities for your organization on a larger scale? And you want to make sure when you're preparing your speech, your presentation, that to the extent possible, you're speaking to those priorities. So you know that you're setting yourself up to connect with the people around the table. That's one thing. Next thing is when you're preparing, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, we're really good with data and data analysis. Collect your data. That's not only going to help you build your case or make your argument stronger, but it's going to make you feel better. It's going to give you more confidence because you know that what you're saying is rooted in facts, not opinion. The next thing, and I think this surprises some people, introverts tend to be very good storytellers. And that's because many of us are voracious readers. So you read a lot, you're good at telling stories. Work stories into your presentations. That helps you connect with people as well on more of an interpersonal level, especially if they're stories about yourself, right? You're showing your more vulnerable side, but you're doing it in a way that's a little more comfortable for you as an introvert because you've planned it ahead of time. You're not just trying to make it up on the fly. And then the last thing is prepare, practice. Stand up in front of a room, do it in front of your family, in front of friends, in front of colleagues you can trust. So it's really, the biggest thing is preparing yourself, practicing so that you're not in that discomfort zone of needing to think out loud like the extroverts do.
What myths about introversion do you aim to dispel in your work?
Love it. So the first one I already talked about, which was that introverts are not good presenters. We talked about that, right? Totally false. Another myth is we don't like to work with people, or even worse, that we don't like people. So we do like people, and many of us do like to work with people. And I think collaboration is a good thing, but it needs to be managed and it needs to be balanced for the most part with individual work time. So we're not always working with other people. Another one, and this is kind of the overarching one, is that we're not wired to be leaders, that we're just, that we're followers. We're not going to be the director or the vice president or, God forbid, the CEO. and it's just not true. And unfortunately, there's this extrovert bias in most workplaces that you need to have those extrovert typical traits to be able to lead. And as a result, too many introverts are overlooked for leadership roles and overlooked for the contributions they make.
And that's a shame. But I think we can all learn a lot from introverts and extroverts. But let's turn it around. What lessons can extroverts learn from introverts, especially about leadership?
I think they can learn that there's value in taking some time to think through before you offer an idea or a solution. That's the biggest one, that not responding as quickly, or let me flip the way I say that, taking some more time to respond and to give ideas some thought, that can actually produce some better ideas. And that's true for extroverts too sometimes, right? Because there could be data that you're not aware of or other perspectives that you hadn't taken into account that you're going to miss if you're just answering in the moment. So that is a big one. One of the things I recommend when a team is coming together for the first time, or a group of people are forming around a project for the first time, is to go around the table, whether it's in person or the Zoom room, and for every person to share with the group what they need to be most successful on the project or on the team. And that's a great opportunity for introverts, for example, to say, I need time, I need a balance of collaboration and individual work time. Or it's really helpful for me to get meeting agendas in advance, and that's a best practice for everyone, I would say, but especially for introverts, so that they can prepare for the various agenda items and pull their talking points together ahead of time. So, I think the overarching lesson of that for extroverts is, well, for everyone around the table, you're going to learn how you can best support your colleagues, which is going to lead to theoretically a better outcome and a better experience for everyone. And I think a learning for the extroverts is that there are other ways of working that are equally good, and that by allowing for diversity in how we're approaching work, how people communicate, how they contribute their ideas. So introverts, they might not come up with the ideas or want to share the ideas in front of the group in the moment at the meeting, but hey, can I meet with you after the meeting one-on-one? Or can I give you my ideas in an email or in a memo afterward, and you're going to get better work out of me if you let me do that?
Is the Myers-Briggs, or what is the best test that you can take as a group, as a company, to identify the introverts versus the extroverts?
So I'm a big fan of Myers-Briggs. I'm certified in doing that. So some of the ethical considerations with Myers-Briggs, one of the ethical guidelines is that if you pay for an employee to take the test, you can't force them to share their results with anybody. So I'll say that up front. But what you can do, and there are facilitators like me who do this, is you can have workshops for your company, for your team, where everyone has already taken it. And then you kind of give people options to share what they'd like. So, and you can make some assumptions, you can kind of read between the lines, even if you don't do Myers-Briggs, because you can't as a company say, okay, we're going to have everyone do it, we're going to force you to do it, and we're going to see all your reports. You can't do that to say, okay, this is what our workforce looks like. But when you're thinking about introversion and extroversion, you really can, as a manager, I believe, you can tell. And what I encourage managers to do is, or even to peers, pay attention. Pay attention to when individual employees, when are they doing their best work? When do they seem most energized? What are they contributing, and in what format? And it's going to help you probably to guess where they fall on the introverted extroverted spectrum. And once you know that, you can begin to better support them, give them those opportunities to work in ways that are going to bring out their strengths.
So can a company force all their employees to take the Myers-Briggs, but not share the information, or you can't force everyone to take it, right?
That's a good question. I don't believe you can force someone to do it. I know you cannot get access to the report without the employee's consent.
Yeah, I'm thinking of actually, we did that a few years ago with a smaller team. Now we have a larger team, but I'm thinking, you know, maybe get folks who want to participate, and then we can start mapping out where everybody is on which team and which division. Because it'd be really interesting to see, right, development versus operations versus success versus, and where that mix is. That's really interesting. Mm. And I love the question when you're having a project meeting or just meetings in general, what do you need from me? Like, what's the best way of you handling these calls, these meetings? You know, what can we provide you, and what do you need from us? Really, really interesting. So, Stacy, I love to close out my interviews with the following question. Who did you have to stop being, and who did you need to become to manifest your current success?
Oh, gosh. I had to stop caring what other people thought about me.
Mm, love that.
I mean, really, I had to stop worrying that as an introvert, people were judging me and thinking I was less than. I had to stop worrying that I was going to launch this business and people were going to say, who does she think she is? She can't be a coach. She can't be an entrepreneur. And I had to just not care. And I've really stopped caring for the most part. And I feel like I've gotten to this place, the exact place where I'm supposed to be. And the convergence of my experiences, my aha moments, my education, all of it led me. I'm happy to share, I'm 52 years old. So let's say I'm in the last decade of my professional life, I'd say. And there's no place I'd rather be. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I have this company I created called iFactor Leadership. If you had told me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would be doing this, I would have laughed you out the door. And I would have thought I didn't have the confidence, the expertise, who would I be to do something like that? But I'm doing it.
And what age did you start your first company?
Well, I did public relations. I had my own consulting firm when I was 26. So I did that for about 5 years. And then before I went back to school for public health. And then I started another one in 2018. So that was 6 years. So I was 46 when I started my own public health consulting firm. And now this I've been doing for about a year and a half, the coaching.
See, it's never too late to start. And you keep going over and over again.
No.
Stacy, it was such a pleasure to have you on the show. Tell the Seven Hatters what you're currently up to, how they can reach you, how you can be of service to the community.
Seven Hatters, you can find me online at ifactorleadership.com. And I do private coaching for introverted professionals, where I help you to identify your positive core, the best of who you are, to then identify professional goals and create a plan for reaching them, all in ways that tap into your innate introverted strengths. And if you're not quite ready for coaching, I have an online course you can do on your own time called The Introvert's Leadership Formula. And it looks at how to communicate powerfully, how to prevent burnout, and then literally, how do you effectively ask for your next raise and promotion in ways that tap into your strengths and make it hard for someone to say no. So check me out.
Love it. And a Myers-Briggs expert.
Yep. If you want to do your Myers-Briggs profile, I'm happy to do that with you. And we talk about the implications of that for how you can be a more powerful communicator and leader.
I love it. Stacy, wonderful nuggets. I learned a ton. I'm sure it's going to be well received. Thank you so much for gracing us on the Seven Hats.
Thank you, Yuval. It was my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Stacy. Let's end today with the show segment that I refer to as What Can We Hang Our Hat On? And here is my takeaway. Today, let's talk about energy. As entrepreneurs, leaders, and high achievers, we're constantly being told to push harder, show up more, network wider, and be everywhere at once. But what if success isn't about how much you do, but about how well you manage your energy while doing it? Stacy's story is a masterclass in understanding the invisible currency that fuels us. Energy. She spent years feeling drained by a world that seemed to reward only those that thrive in fast-paced, high-stimulation environments. But when she stopped trying to keep up with that unsustainable pace and designed her work around her natural rhythms, everything changed. And that's a lesson we can all learn from. Whether you identify as an introvert or not, understanding what gives you energy and what depletes it is one of the most valuable insights you can gain as an entrepreneur. Because burnout isn't just about working long hours. It's about working against yourself. So here's the challenge. Over the next week, track your energy, not your time. Pay attention to when you feel sharp, creative, and in flow. Notice what kind of tasks, meetings, or environments drain you. And then ask yourself, what small shifts can I make to work in alignment with my natural energy instead of against it? Because at the end of the day, the most successful people aren't the ones who grind the hardest. They're the ones who've mastered the art of sustaining their energy over the long game. I want to thank Stacy once again for sharing her wisdom with us today. And if you found this episode valuable, hit that subscribe button and share it with someone who needs to hear this message. Because this is the kind of insight that can change how we work, lead, and live. So for now, I will bid you farewell and success on your journey. And until next time, my name is Yuval Selick, and I tip my hat to you.